Brian Lawton, former NHL player, player agent, GM, now television NHL analyst, joins us once again. Brian, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing very well.
All right.
We were last night in Edmonton. The Oilers had a goal scored on the power play that was disallowed due to the offside rule. And then they scored again on the same power play, which brings up the pre-1956 rule where you used to sit the full 2 minutes on the power play. You being a former GM, has that rule ever been brought up in a GM meetings? Is it something you think there'd be any appetite for the GM and then the players to look at?
Has been brought up. Never a real strong appetite. It's something I wish they would bring back, quite frankly, as we try to come up with new ways to create a little bit more scoring. We already have it to some degree, right, with majors, but I'd love to see it be attached to minors as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, Brian, though, you know, younger fans of the league might not realize that it was in place. So it's not like you're changing the fabric of the game. It once was a part of the fabric of the game. And instead of trying to trick up the game to create more offense, go back to a rule that was in place before.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, the counter side to that is, well, if you get a cheesy penalty, should you really be penalized that much for it? And to me, a penalty is a penalty. And I had this discussion with somebody, and I said, well, give me an example. And they said, oh, we have bad ice. The puck jumps up. Defenseman tries to chip it around the boards, goes over the glass, get a two-minute penalty. Other team scores 2-3 goals. Should that happen? I don't know. I guess I could make up a million different scenarios. I just think it feels right to me, and it feels like it's the right time to give it strong consideration.
What do you think of the offside rule? The video review, I should say.
I personally like it, Jason. I am not, you know, for me, it's not about small screens. I work for NHL Network. We had this discussion one night. You know, a small screen 4 inches from your face is equivalent to a 65-inch screen, you know, 12 feet from you. So it's not about the screen size. For me, it's about who's making the final judgment. Is it going to be the guy that probably made the call? Or somebody in Toronto. I personally would like to see somebody else make the final judgment because I think humans are fallible. And you're always going to have a degree of that. As far as the overall rule itself in the game, I love it. I think it's been a great idea. I know it was a little wonky last night in Edmonton, but that was the right call.
No, but here's the thing. It only eliminates offense, Brian. Earlier in the game, the Oilers had a 3-on-2 that clearly was not offside that was whistled down. You can't review that. So all you're doing is cutting off goals in a league that for 98 years didn't need this rule to have integrity.
I absolutely agree with that, but keep in mind, we don't want to have offense at the cost of having all kinds of things that we know are basically, I don't want to say fraudulent, but not right. That's your counter argument as well. We don't want to do anything to stop goals. And I think we do want to stop goals that are not proper, correct, however you want to say it. And that's just the price that you have to pay. Ultimately, for me, it gives the game a little bit more integrity to have it called properly.
That's interesting. Jason and I were just talking about that earlier. Where do you come down on in the spectrum of you want human element, which, you know, reigned over sports until we got into the electronic age, versus getting it right and absolutely right all the time? Because if you want to do that, if you're at the far end of get it right no matter what, don't you have to even go further, as much as there's not a real taste for it, and review everything?
I think like most things, you want to keep in mind moderation. You absolutely could go further. For me, having been a general manager, having sat up there, and I can remember numerous instances where I knew it was wrong and there was no way to correct it, it drove me nuts. I mean, nuts to the point where you want to take the phone and throw it on the ice, which isn't a good idea from the press box. So in any event, I would rather see more opportunities to get it right without taking it so far that we turn, you know, what should be a 2-hour-plus event into a 4-hour affair. I think that would be my argument in regards to moderation, right? Too much of anything is not good for you. So that's where I would draw the line. It's a little hypocritical. I'm not saying it to be that way. I'm just saying it as a practical matter.
Brian Lawton, NHL analyst, joins us. You and I will agree to disagree. The offside rule, to me, in a game that never has goals, and some of them are literally, but the human eye just can't pick that up. So now, sure, technically it's right by going to the video review, but now we're asking guys on plays that they just, sometimes it's impossible to get it right at that speed. And I don't mind it, you know, something like that we never would have looked back on. I get the Matt Duchene goal that was 2 feet offside. What I would like is, if you have ones that are obvious, right, where you can see without needing slow motion or anything, sure, maybe you can have an eye in the sky that says, okay, that's offside. But something that has to go to video review in super slow motion, that has to be going frame by frame, which isn't the human eye, to me, then it becomes where we're taking the human element out of it, because our eyes simply can't do that.
Well, that's fine. You're a proponent to going back to the way it was. And if a Matt Duchene-type goal pops up where a guy is just that far offside, then it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, then you're prepared to live with that. As a general manager, I could tell you that drove me crazy. And if something like that ever impacted a season, fans are emotionally invested, but they're not getting paid to oversee things. As a manager, a player, a coach, I can't tell you how irate you get when those types of things happen.
Brian, in all of the management meetings, we saw a few come out that never got any traction this past week, discussing, well, defenseman in the trapezoid too long with the puck, which obviously never went anywhere. Was there ever a rule that was discussed that never went anywhere, or a rule change that you wish would have?
Berkey had a crazy rule he had brought up a few years back. It was called the Huggy Bear or Bear Hug rule, where you would be allowed, if a guy turned his back, to kind of smother him with a bear hug rather than drill him head first into the boards, or that be an end result. Mm-hmm. Just never really went anywhere. The intention was good. Nobody could just take it any further. And Berkey's thought was, look, we got too many guys. You know, essentially what he was trying to legislate out was boarding.
Yes.
Which is a good idea, right? Because boarding is different today than it used to be. You know, today boarding is when you hit a guy directly from behind and he ends up going to the boards in a dangerous position. It used to be really any way you hit a guy, if he ended up into the boards, it was boarding. So, you know, but that was the one rule that stands out that just never got any traction.
Brian, your thoughts on the expansion draft, the discussions at the meetings, interesting dynamics, cap involved, you know, going 8-1 or 7-3-1, the dynamics of that. There's a lot more involved in the expansion now than before the cap world.
Yeah, I mean, I like what I've heard, and we don't know anything definitive yet, but I like what we've heard in terms of, let's start the Las Vegas Aces or whatever other name, assuming it is Las Vegas. Everybody seems to be coming to that conclusion. Let's start them with a much better group than some of the other teams have had. In the past, I've felt like that's just the price you have to pay. And managers that really wanted to penalize these teams, that really fought it all the way through, mm-hmm. prevailed, you know, even to the point of sliding people in drafts, things like that, but particularly in the expansion draft. We don't know what the rules are going to be yet, but I hope that they're more lenient to promote a better team for whoever is expansion. That's where I stand on that very clearly. I'm not a manager right now, so, you know, maybe I'm talking a little bit out of school, but that's the way I see it. If you're going to ask people to pay $500 million or whatever the expansion fee might be, then I think they have to expect to have a reasonable club, not an absolute bottom of the barrel Atlanta Thrashers make the playoff one time in 12 years, whatever their final record was. That to me just is a little bit ludicrous, and I don't think it's beneficial for the league. I think you're setting up a team to struggle, and ultimately when you look at these things, guys, one of the big questions that ownership groups do ask is, are we going to have to carry this new franchise? And the answer is yes, if you don't give them a good enough team, guys.
Yeah. Now, Brian, do you have a law background?
I do not.
Oh, okay. So I'll ask you this anyway. There's one of the many discussions about the expansion is going to be the no movement clause. No trade clause, if you're exposed to waivers, to me, exposed to waivers, exposed to expansion draft is the same thing. But a no movement clause is somewhat different. Do you think the NHL will allow players with no movement clauses to be exposed? Would it have to be an agreed upon thing, or do you think it'll be not a go? What's your thought process on that?
I haven't done the deep dive into it. It is silent as far as I know in the CBA in regards to that. That always creates an avenue for both sides to potentially bargain for something. That would be my view from 10,000 feet.
Okay.
I do agree with you that a no move is different from a new no trade. That's clear. Ultimately, you know, now you want to go through and put it in practicality, Jason. You want to run a couple models and see who would be guys that maybe would fall into that category. How many people are we talking about affecting here?
Yeah, that's
I think
fair.
It's incredibly minimal.
Yeah, that's very
good. I think it's a bargaining chip for somebody. I can't say who. I don't know who, so I'm not being cryptic about it.
And if you're the GM of this new expansion team and it comes in and, you know, you obviously have to – do you think they're going to have to automatically get to the salary floor? Or will they get some sort of relief as a percentage for 1 year before they have to get to it? Well, any idea on what that would be? And let's say you were allowed some leeway. Would you then be leaning towards more inexperienced players with ability rather than proven veterans who you know are only going to top out as third-line guys?
I think that there will be a transition period. We've seen things like that in the past in the CBA, whether it was compliance buyouts. Whenever you have massive changes and obviously letting a new team into the league and expecting them to ramp up to, you know, essentially a salary cap that only has a 20% variance, there's a lot to ask of a new group one. So that would be my first thought. In terms of building a team, I think it would be just like building any other team. You would love to have a balance, but I believe the flavor would be more towards younger, inexperienced players. I see that as the way the league is going, and that is what I know I would do. Now, you might get five different answers from that. I also believe that, you know, coming up with the best defense you can would be your quickest solution to winning. I think we could probably sell that in Edmonton. What do you guys think? A bunch of forwards really good or a bunch of D?
Well, they would like a mixture of both at the same time, ideally.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because you touched on it already, Brian. To me, it's so important that this team is, you know, that this expansion club, the let's call them the Aces, assuming they're going to go one at a time here, is at least competitive right away. It seems like there's lots of room. Based on what we haven't heard, maybe I'm assuming too much, that you could actually put together a competitive team based on the protection, you know, the 8-1 or the 7-3-1. There's enough players out there with the cap figured in that this might be a decent club.
Oh, I absolutely think it would be if it is not what it was for Minnesota and Columbus. If it is, you know, what we're seeing now, which is significantly lightened up, is going to give the new team, and no disrespect to the Anchorage Aces or whatever their name is, but we'll call Las Vegas the Aces. And yes, I think they absolutely would have a tremendous opportunity if you get somebody that is really in tune with the league and you build a quality staff and do your due diligence, because they're going to have plenty of time to ramp up. They're going to run a full scouting staff, very much the way David Poile did. I mean, David was hired a year and a half before Nashville started. I think they do tremendous.
Brian, always good to catch up with you. It's going to be an interesting final 10 or 12 games in the NHL. Lots of great races, not necessarily for the playoffs, although there is two, the final spot in each conference, but more so for playoff seedings as they're all up for grabs.
Right, and we never even talked about the lottery. And keep in mind, 5 out of 19 times, the 30th place team has got the first pick. So it's not only always a guarantee Toronto Maple Leaf fans today.
Oh, I'm telling Oiler fans know well aware, Brian, that winning the lottery likely happens better when you're not the best right. chance team going in, for sure. We appreciate that. Oh, I just – Oiler fans – well, I'll be honest, I'm not an Oiler fan, but as an after watching the outcry in Toronto last time, I can only imagine what happens if they lose the lottery this time.
with the first pick, the Edmonton Oilers are proud to select.
Wow. People will freak out if Edmonton wins the lottery.
What do you mean you guys aren't Oiler fans? I thought you were the head of the fan club.
Yeah, no, sadly not. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on, guys.